second and 14 at the 33-yard line. Same set. Two tight ends, two receivers. Here's Fred Taylor. Play action. Dropping back to throw. Martin looking down the middle of the field for Keenan McCardell. Makes the grab, and there he goes, 30. There's Keenan at the 20. He's at the 10, 5. Touchdown, Jacksonville. Martin to McCardell for 67 and 6 on the scoreboard. Mark back to throw. Pocket collapsing. Steps. Is being shaped. Let's a ball go for Jimmy Smith in the end zone. Touchdown, Jacksonville.
Oh, take that. Take that.
Now live from Everbank Field, 1010 XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your hosts Mike Dempsey and Tony Smith.
All right, here we go. Jaguars Today on this Monday, Christmas week. Brought to you by Wild West Guns and Gold. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you. John Osier will be along in about an hour from now to look back at the Jags' latest failure to capture victory yesterday. Loss, win, loss, win, loss, win, loss, Tony, is the home slate for the Jacksonville Jaguars, at least at Everbank this year, throwing out the London game up and down, up and down, up and down, up and down, yeah, every single time. Look, I don't think we're surprised that they didn't. I'm surprised that the offense couldn't score more points yesterday. I don't think you can be surprised when this Jaguar team this year loses to any particular opponent, because they've shown that they can play down, if it's even playing down to people. You know, you lose to enough to win teams. I get it. The record indicates you're better than these teams, but the performance doesn't. Certainly Atlanta's record was better coming in, but they had been on that slide of six games, one win in the last eight. And as Jeff said, had been very inept in a number of areas. And, you know, against the Jags, any quarterback with a pulse has a chance on that given day. Because, look, as we know, it's not anything new. They cannot generate any pass rush. Yesterday was no exception.
No, it really wasn't. And I know I get the frustration from fans and the questions about why they can't generate a pass rush, and Gus Bradley being the defensive guru, and why they in 3 years they haven't found a way to do anything about it. And I think the numbers last year were okay for the Jaguars as far as getting after the passer. We talked about it a lot last year in the offseason. Was it felt like they were getting home a lot, and especially at key times in games, they found ways to get home, and the Giants game would be one that you point to in particular. And why has it taken 3 years? Well, I think partly because they decided to tear it down as much as they did. It's not like there was a whole lot of pass rush here in Jacksonville to begin with, but the fact that they decided to tear it down, Caldwell and Bradley, when they got here, as far down as they did, meant that they had a lot that they had to build up. And the opportunities that they saw in the last couple of drafts, right or wrong, it looks like they got the franchise quarterback a couple of years ago. Blake Bortles certainly looks like he's going to be the franchise guy for the next decade. They tried last year to go get the pass rusher. I think the big question you can ask is, during that first draft, was Jokel the direction they should have gone, or should it have been Ziggy Ansah or somebody like that instead, that this team went with in the first round of that draft to address pass rush before they addressed offensive line? I think Jokel is an okay player. I certainly don't think he's great. I think Ziggy Ansah has the potential right now, when you look at him in this league, he's one of the handful of the best young pass rushers in the NFL.
Right. Now, had Jokel been at that level, I don't have a problem going left tackle over pass rusher.
I don't either.
It's not that. It's about the quality of the player that you selected, and it was on display again yesterday. Not a good performance from Luke Jokel.
They left themselves so many positions and questions to be addressed with this roster, with how it was bad anyway under Malarkey, but they tore it down to a point where there was so much they had to get done. It was going to be three drafts before they could get it all done. And the unfortunate part of it is they drafted pass rush finally this year, and the guy got hurt. I mean, he got hurt. There's nothing you can do about
that. Do you think that Dante Fowler Jr. alone would have fixed this, though? It would have helped.
Fixed, no. But I think there have been games where having a guy that can win on two or three plays by himself would have made a huge difference for this team.
Possibly.
And they just haven't had anybody that can do that. And I think you saw in games where, look, Andre Branch against Indianapolis won. Just one on a handful of plays. Just by himself went out there and made a handful of plays, and it was difference-making stuff for this
Sure.
football team. They haven't had that. They had it for a game from Andre Branch, and really haven't had it outside of that.
Granted, but we can't know for sure. And I suspect you're right that Dante Fowler Jr. would have made a difference here and there along the way. But we can't know for sure, because he's never played in the National Football League. There have been plenty of guys who were high draft picks that didn't pan out. And, oh, by the way, everybody deals with injuries as well. And, you know, if that's, if you can't be competitive on one side of the football because your top rookie pick isn't available to you, then that's an issue, I think. And look, I understand the frustration, as Jeff was saying. I don't think we've ever criticized anybody on this show for saying, we need change, we want change. We just said, don't get your hopes up because we don't think it's going that way.
I don't think it is.
Right. I'm not in Shad Khan's head. I may be completely wrong. Maybe he's had enough, and maybe come the Monday after the season, there's going to be big sweeping changes around here. I don't get the sense that that's the case.
I don't either.
But at the same token, I don't have any issue with somebody saying, you know, look, yeah, the record's better, but as many have mentioned, including us and just about every Jaguar fan with half a brain recognizes, things were handed to them this year, Tony. The ability to play against backup quarterbacks as many times as they had. The fact that yesterday you've got Houston and Indy out there with third-string quarterbacks, that's what the division has come to. They're down to nothing at the quarterback position with these two football
teams.
Because
you couldn't make a field goal in Indy or make 39 points stand up against Tennessee.
Right. And yet, here you are, and that those are facts, that those things happen, and you find yourself trailing these two teams whose quarterbacks can't break a pane of glass right now, basically. So, I totally get the frustration, and with that, we ask today, other than the final outcome, the score, the fact that the Jags lost, it's the most frustrating thing. What's the single most frustrating aspect of yesterday's game? I think you have a lot to choose from. You know, the play at the end of the half, really, if you encapsulate that, and I know people said, well, you can't count on Myers making that field goal. Yeah, I can count on him making that field goal. That field goal is like the old extra point where no one ever missed, okay? That was shorter than the old extra points had they kicked it from the 1 yard line, snapped it from the 1 yard line. So, I'm pretty sure they had three on the board at that point. Instead, they gave away three, and that's a 6-point swing. And what was the outcome of the game? 6-point margin, yeah. Right? So that's one. You can go to Denard Robinson laying the ball on the ground. You can go to the failure of the offense on third down, failure of the defense on key third downs, third and long, Stoney, continually being picked up by the Atlanta Falcons in the second half. There are a lot of aspects to it, but share your thoughts with us today on Twitter at MD_1010XL and at 1010XL Fat Tony, at 1010XL Tyler as well, and the Jaguars Today Facebook page. The Tom Bush Family of Dealerships fan feedback question of the day, the most frustrating aspect of yesterday's loss, other than the fact that they lost, right? We get the final outcome is the most frustrating thing. So share your thoughts with us on that. 641-1010. Phone line's already loading up. We'll get to your calls coming up next. Also, that's the number for the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line if you'd like to participate in the program that way. It's a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday. John Osher will be along later on. We'll hear a little bit of post-game sound as well. Taking your calls next. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, Jaguars Today here on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. All right, Jaguars Today on a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday. We're still alive, Tony. I hesitate to even mention it in the playoff picture. Believe me, I'm not trying to hype it up.
Oh, it's simple.
Like I think
the scenario
going to go.
Is really simple. It's just very unlikely,
right?
And it's just the Jags and Titans have to win out.
Quite frankly, it's not much more unlikely than had they won yesterday. I'm not trying to excuse it. It's bad that they lost. Don't get me wrong. It's bad. Okay, so don't confuse it. I'm not trying to mitigate the loss in any way, shape, or form. Okay, but had they won the game, right? They would still need Houston to lose out. At this point, right?
Yep.
And they would need Indy to lose one of two.
Miami or Tennessee.
Right. Now they specifically need Indy to lose the Tennessee game instead of either either or, right?
Yeah. But they need Tennessee to win back-to-back.
Right. But, I mean, but you already needed Tennessee to beat Houston this upcoming week. And so there was a chance you were going to need them to beat Indy had Indy beaten Miami this week.
Sure.
So, I mean, you could.
And who knows who's going to be playing quarterback for those teams?
Well, that's the point.
You know, coming down the stretch here. I mean, especially this week with Houston, if Hoyer, who's in the concussion protocol for the second time now this year, is 1 week going to be enough for him to get back onto the field, or are they going to have to go with Brandon Whedon this week against Tennessee? Of course, who knows what the Titans are going to do with Mariota, who they held out in the second half yesterday.
By the way, Mettenberger was played a lot better anyway. I know Mariota didn't play all that much yesterday, but Mettenberger got that offense going a little bit yesterday. Regardless, we're not sitting here to dwell on trying to put a happy face on it. There's nothing happy about it. Right?
No.
I mean, you had all this momentum, all this goodwill, all the good feeling, win this game, close out with back-to-back wins at home, have a winning record at Everbank. You know, whatever, come what may, for the next 2 weeks. You'd be practically in the same position in terms of the AFC South, but you'd feel a lot better about, you know, doing your part to earn it right now than than the alternative where you're at right now. Don't get me wrong, by the way. I would take a horrible 7-9 division title in a second.
No doubt.
I just don't think it's very likely that that's going to come to pass. It might not have been likely before, but we just wanted them to win to keep the conversation going on their terms, right? Not the, oh, well, mathematically, they are still alive. And they are. And trust me, there are a lot of teams that would rather trade with them. But the point is not to say, hey, feel good about what happened yesterday. That's not the point at all. So moving along, let's get some phone calls in here at 641-1010 if you'd like to weigh in. What was the most frustrating thing about it other than the just the final outcome of the football game? Share your thoughts with us here on any aspect of Jaguar football. You're welcome to do that. Mac on the north side going to lead us off here on 1010XL. Good morning, Mac. How are you?
Fellas, I'm going to get some. When I sat in the stadium, me and my wife, and they lost, I felt the sting. I said, you know what? I'm just going to sit here. And I thought about it. I said, you know what? They are two games behind the Texans. And one game, and it hit me. I said, these clowns are still mad at that guy. And I started going to my Google, and now, okay, now, right now, if back in August before the first preseason game, if they would have said that the Jacksonville, and I know that the Colts are crumbling and Houston got no quarterback, if the Jaguars are going to be in the hunt with two games left, will you talk that right now?
Well, yeah, but you would have also thought that in the hunt meant really, more of a good team, right? I mean, not the fact that the whole division would collapse in upon itself, which it seems to have done this year. And the fact that they would play so many opponents either when they were struggling, when they were terrible, without their starting quarterback. So, yeah, it's good that they're in the hunt, but they're in the hunt due to circumstances that they had nothing to do with, in my opinion. They're in the hunt because they're among the bad teams in a terrible division. That's why they're in the hunt. So, all right, Mac, thank you for the call. I mean, look, it's better to be in the hunt than not in the hunt, but it's better to be in the hunt.
Sure.
When you're actually good, right? If they were a 9-win team now, you're like, damn, man, they may lose out on tiebreakers. There's, you know, whatever. I'd feel much better about that in the hunt than this in the hunt.
Right. Or if, look, Carolina won the division at 7-8-1 last year in the NFC South, but Carolina finished the season rolling.
Like six in a row.
Right. I mean, if the Jaguars were doing that kind of thing to get to that point, then you're like, okay, this feels like a team that is figuring it out here at the end of the season, and they get into the postseason or they don't. They may be playing in a bad enough division that it would have been enough to get them in, right? If they were doing that kind of thing, then yeah, it's a different feeling of being in the hunt. They're still technically in the hunt, but it's all the opportunities that they've just given away this year.
Sure.
And that those things are the reason why they're not in much more control of their destiny at this point. And I keep going to the Indianapolis and Tennessee games, but those are the two where if they just find ways to hold on in those two football games, they're in control.
Right.
They're not chasing anybody. Everybody's chasing them right now in the AFC South. If they can kick a field goal and make 39 points stand up against Marcus Mariota and Tennessee, they're in control of the AFC South. That's where that division was this year, and instead, they found different ways to lose both those ball games.
641-1010, Rhett and Nocatee, you're next up this morning on Jaguars Today. Good morning.
Yeah, I came to Jacksonville a few years ago, and I've fully been, you know, watching the Jags and becoming a fan. And I think that has me most frustrated. And I saw it yesterday, and I think it was in the Jets game. Was the game management? And yesterday, he called a timeout around the 3-minute mark. And then he never used the timeouts again until after, maybe after the 2-minute warning. So what has me the most frustrated is the use of timeouts in game management. I personally think that, you know, using timeouts before the 2-minute warning is probably the most beneficial. So just want to get your thoughts on that.
Well, it depends, particularly that last play, right? You could have called a timeout. You could have forced them to call a play before the 2-minute warning. But in doing so, you're giving them the opportunity to throw the ball for the first down. Instead, they settle for handing the ball off to Devontae Freeman after they had already converted it once, Tony, right? They're down there, and we're sitting here as it plays out, and I agree to let the ball or let the clock roll to the 2-minute warning, because then if they want to pass, then you might get a clock stoppage on the other side with only 5 seconds gone without having to use a timeout, and you'll still leave yourself a couple the rest or whatever the number was at that point the rest of the way. That's a tough scenario to be in because they're not stopping anybody, right? You want to call your timeouts and hope that you're going to get a stop there, but then Atlanta picks up another first down and they could bleed more clock. I didn't think it was particularly bad the way they used their timeouts yesterday. I'm not saying clock management has been perfect this year or that it was even perfect yesterday, but I just didn't think that sequence was particularly bad to me. They got the ball back with enough time to do something with it, Tony. They just didn't do anything with it. They went out on downs. They didn't run out of time in that football game.
No, it's, look, I think that it's actually something that Gus Bradley's gotten better at over the course of his time here in Jacksonville. He's managed game situations better and better with that kind of thing than he did early on. And I think there were a lot of questions that could and should be asked about what Gus Bradley was doing with challenges and timeouts and different things in the first couple of years. But this year, I think he's actually been pretty good when it comes to those kind of things.
Let's go to Desmond on the south side next up here on Jaguars Today. Good morning, Desmond.
Good morning. How are y'all?
Good. What's up?
I didn't tell JJ my exact location. I'm on top of the James Point Bridge right now because I'm worried about the jump off the cliff because we are the most inconsistent team. We do good 1 week, then next week we have a bad game. I just want to know, I mean, the officiation was real bad yesterday because that, towards the end, that pass interference call on Tevin, I mean, that was a real bad call. I see games like that yesterday. On the other officiation crew, and other crews ain't calling the same pass interference play we got called on. I mean, and then Julius Thomas, first half, he not paying attention to the ball. He missed a touchdown right there. I mean, we got hell yesterday. I mean, the official ain't called it, but when vice versa, when we hold a call, when we do a holding, they want to call the penalty, you know, on us or whatnot. I mean, as far as playoffs, man, it's so far to reach because you got Tennessee finna play Houston. Houston finna beat Tennessee. Then we gotta play Houston. I mean, it goes way back to when we played San Diego. If we control them games and win that game, we won't have to worry about, oh, well, this team has to lose this, that, and other. We won't have to worry about none of that nonsense. But I feel like Bob Babish, his time, he gotta go because that was a bad defensive play call we did yesterday, man. Man, now I'll take the comments off the air, man.
All right. First of all, stay on the cliff or the bridge. I wasn't quite sure what you're jumping off of there. You're a little all over the place with that whole scenario. You know,
isn't that kind of the deal, though?
Yeah, no,
like,
I get it.
Like, you can jump from thing to thing to thing to thing that's a problem.
The Julius Thomas play, Tony, did you get the sense that he, like, gave up on the play or didn't know?
No, I think there were a couple times yesterday where guys didn't get their heads around a Blake quick enough. That was a play where I thought Blake could have put some air under that and given Julius a better chance.
Right.
Because he broke wide, wide open. There was a play, though, in the seam where Julius didn't get his head around, and it was a well-thrown ball by Blake, and he just didn't turn around in time. Denard had a couple in the flat that it worked like that where guys just weren't turning around to Blake in time. And I don't know if Blake was throwing it because he was under pressure.
Right.
Specifically on those plays or not. I don't know. I can't remember in my own head. I thought the officiating in yesterday's game really wasn't an issue. I thought that the Jags got the benefit of a kind of halfway call down on the goal line on that third down where they called the pass interference on Allen Hurns. I thought that's a call that they can make or not make.
Right.
And the Telvin Smith play I thought was very similar. Telvin got into the receiver's chest before he turned around to play the ball. Now he turned around and played the ball, but he had made contact with the receiver before he got turned around to play that ball. So it's one that they can call or not call. And I think one of those calls hurt him. One of those calls helped him.
I think you watch every single game, there are blown calls on both sides right now in the National Football League. That's not to say there are not some games where the Jags are on the short end of the stick.
Sure.
But I don't think it's any kind of pattern. I don't think it's any kind of thing like, well, we don't have to. Why would they want to give anything to Atlanta? Atlanta's not going anywhere.
Yeah.
You know, they're a team that's sinking fast. So you know, typically, look, can there be some bad calls that impact the outcome of a game? Yes, and particularly when they come in the final minute or two, because you run out of time to overcome them. But I'm sure with you. I didn't think it was an officiating game that handed it to Atlanta yesterday.
And look, I'll say I think officiators need to be more prepared than they are. I mean, the in-game situation that we had with them not knowing whether the Jags should be charged a timeout on the Josh Evans play. It's how do you guys not know exactly how that needs to be officiated? Why does the NFL league office need to tell you that no, you don't charge the Jaguars a timeout in that situation? It seems like a common sense thing. If there's a penalty that stops the clock, one team or the other should not have to give up a timeout in that situation.
Look, after what the referees let Odell Beckham Jr. and Josh Norman do yesterday with very minimal interference.
Goodness.
I mean, honestly, you know, can you be surprised at anything that they call or don't call at this point? Let's get Eric in Ponte Vedra before we break here. Eric, good morning. How are you?
Hey, good morning. How you guys doing?
Good.
Good, good. Okay, well, I watched the game like you guys did yesterday, and I got to tell you, the reason why we lost was because our running game was stagnant. 28 yards, I believe, we had. If Yeldon would have been in there, would have changed the game. I just think not having him, they didn't respect Denard, and Denard fumbled. Denard, I'm not sure we'll even be here next year, but that was a big problem. And then the second thing I've got for you guys is, if I had this right, so if all Indy has to do is lose one game, and then Texas
it has to be against Tennessee.
Okay, so even if Indy wins one of the two,
the Miami game is meaningless.
Yeah, Jags went out, Titans went out. That's the scenario.
Right. Titans need to win their next two games. Jags win their next two games, and that's it, really. If you want to simplify it, that's a good way to look at it.
Just your thoughts on Denard. That's all I got.
All right, thanks, man. Look, I think Denard will absolutely be here next year. It was not at all the performance I expected yesterday after seeing him last week, but run blocking has been an issue. Fumbling is on him, however, okay? The run blocking itself, I mean, you have the one play, Tony, where, you know, Blake Bortles slides just a half yard short of a first down, and honestly, at that point, I think he should have dove for the first down marker, but regardless, he slides, and you're sitting there because the difference in that play then is instead of it being first and 10, it's second and one.
Yeah.
And when you have the fumble and it gets kicked around and you lose 11 or 12 yards on the play, now you're facing third and long instead of second and long, and you have more opportunity to try to pick that play up. But regardless, hang on to the football. I just did not get that performance from him yesterday. Did not see that coming. I really thought he was going to have a big game yesterday.
Yeah, 14 for 28.
Terrible.
With what he had did the week before against Indianapolis. I mean, it was terrible. And we'll talk to Jeff Loggeman tomorrow about what exactly was going on with the run blocking, how much of that is on Denard, and how much is that on the offensive line, and whatever kind of day that they happened to have yesterday. Look, Denard had a team-high 10 targets in the passing game yesterday. He caught 8 of them. I can remember one drop from Denard Robinson among the other two targets that he had there. So he was a pretty good weapon coming out of the backfield.
He was an outlet. Right. He was. Because he didn't do much with the ball when he caught it.
Which is fine. I'm fine with Blake Bortles checking it down to the running back. I wish we had seen more of that over the course of the year, to be honest with you. And it's something that's really become a part of the Jags offense in the last month or so. When the Jags had the back-to-back touchdown drives, they forced a turnover, go down, score the touchdown, make it 17-17, force the punt from Atlanta, and get the ball back at inside their own 10-yard line. And Denard had the drop and the fumble on back-to-back plays. And then the next drive, he has the two fumbles. I mean, it was just that killed it. I mean, whatever momentum the offense had in that football game was killed directly by Denard Robinson putting the ball on the ground, and they never really recovered from those two drives because it gave up field position and turned into two field goals for Atlanta.
Still, why the hell does it take a half to get going on offense?
I don't know.
Seriously, you know, okay, final 2 minutes of the half, we're going to do something now. How about the first 28 minutes of the half?
There was some real urgency. Like, you could feel it from this football team. You almost felt like when they came out for the second half, that looked like a team that was playing for their playoff lives.
And they knew they were the better team.
Right.
Let's show you. Boom, boom, right back. Okay, fresh game. Here we go. And then nothing materialized for them positively after that. 6-4-1-10-10. We'll take more of your calls on the other side. Hear a little post-game sound from Gus Bradley and company as well. Coming up on a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday, Mike Dempsey, Tony Smith here with you. 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
Shotgun for Bortles. Here we go. Snap. Blake looks to the left. Fires it out to the left side. That's intercepted. That is intercepted along the sideline. They are running it back along the right sideline. Blake trying to get there. Trying to knock him out of bounds. He stumbled. And the tackle is made at the 15-yard line, but that's going to run out the clock.
Well, as we know, it didn't run out the clock. They actually put 2 seconds back. Thought it should have been one. Doesn't matter in that instance. Enough time to get the snap off, Tony, and
yep.
Kick a field goal and steal 3 points at the end of the half right there. And not only steal three, you cost yourself at least three. Come on, don't kid yourself. Even Jason Myers makes that one 100% of the time, okay? That's the old extra
right.
point.
Right if there. They don't score on the next
right,
play.
If they don't, right, they have to, right, if you throw that one away, maybe you throw a touchdown pass, on, you have another opportunity. And but I'm trying to go with the minimalist outcome.
Sure. I jokingly said on Twitter right after the play that they should have thrown the fade and then said ducks on Twitter.
Yeah, would have preferred it, though,
but
right?
They had A-Rob one-on-one. On the other side of the field. I mean, he had that whole side of the field one-on-one.
Right. Now, was it a bad play call? Perhaps. Okay. You know, we had a caller yesterday on the post game talking about typical bad play calling, and I took exception to it because I don't think in a season in which your quarterback is setting every statistical standard in your franchise's history, you could say it's been consistently bad play calling. I don't think you just all of a sudden accidentally throw 31 touchdown passes.
Right.
Now, that doesn't mean there aren't instances of it. Tony, you were saying Kamal Ishmael after the game.
Tyler told us this, yeah.
Was saying that they basically knew it was coming. Tyler, where did you see that quote after the game? Kamal Ishmael, his post-game presser here, where he basically just said that, I guess, through film study, they predicted that. We had somebody call up and say they were pointing at Mercedes on the play as well.
Look, I don't like that play. I can tell you when they had A-Rob one-on-one on the other side of the field and they had all those guys on the left side of the formation, and then when everybody basically on the play just started sliding along the goal line on the left side, I was like, what is this? Like, I don't like plays where if you're not moving the quarterback in that direction, trying to throw it away from the quarterback, unless you're putting some air underneath it, right? And letting your guy in a one-on-one situation try to go up and make a play. I just think you're asking for trouble, trying to throw those flat passes in that part of the field. So I don't like the play call there. And I get why they're throwing the ball, because if they throw it, they may get three chances at the end zone before they have to kick
right,
the field.
You can't run it, because if you get tackled, the half's
right.
over.
You're risking not being able to spike the ball, which you probably wouldn't be able to
right.
in that situation. So you got three passes into the end zone. I didn't like that particular play design or call in that situation. Like I said, I think you're putting the ball at way too much risk with that kind of play. And to design a play for Mercedes Lewis, I mean, come on. You got Hearns, you got Robinson, you got Julius Thomas. What are you doing?
I don't mind that aspect of it that much, and I understand what you're talking about with your weapons, but look around the National Football League, and how many times does the oddball guy catch a touchdown, and you're like, wow, that's really good coaching. That's a great scheme. They got this guy wide open because nobody was expecting it.
Sure, and I think you see that down on the goal line a lot, especially like New England will use – you know, Gronkowski and Chandler when they're on the field together, but they'll line them up tight and then they'll move them out wide. And it's basically Brady's like, which guy's matchup do I like more on this play? Right? And they're putting those guys in space and letting them go up and make that play as opposed to, again, that flat route.
Oh, I agree with you. I didn't like the route. I'm just saying the idea that the play was run for Mercedes Lewis, I don't have an issue with that. Because if it's a good enough play design, then you can get guys open. You know, you would expect more attention gets paid to the other guys. I didn't love the play design. You understand what I'm saying? I don't have an issue in general with the general concept
saying.
Of Mercedes being the target on a specific play in the red zone.
I'd rather them design something for Julius Thomas.
Grant, I get that, but I'm sure they have plenty of things that they do design for Julius Thomas, and they've run things designed for Julius Thomas. Sometimes they work, sometimes they don't. You're not going to do that 100% of the time. No team's going to do that 100% of the time. Regardless, let's get a couple of calls. Then we'll get to some of the Gus post-game sound weighing in on the performance or lack thereof yesterday, starting with David in Ponte Vedra up next. What's up, David? How are you?
Pretty good. The about 9 minutes to go, Bortles runs for a first down. Now, I have a 65-inch TV. I'm a retired photographer, but I do have a digital camera, so I even blew up the picture in my camera to know if I was seeing what I was seeing. Bortles, you can see the yellow line. Bortles slid probably on top of the line, ran past the line, but they moved the ball back. But there was no whistle. Now, he was never touched. One player, a defender, actually jumped over him. There were about four other players surrounding him. Now, hypothetically, I believe you can fall down on your own and still get up in NFL, right?
No, hold on. I'll tell you the answer. If you slide feet first,
you're down
at that point automatically, regardless if you're a quarterback or anybody else, you're down, and it's the ball is spotted where the ball is in relation to where the ball is, not where your feet are or any part of your body. That's it. That's a particular rule that's designed to protect quarterbacks mostly for being in that situation. You can't hit those guys.
Yeah.
Because if you said, well, I could slide and get back up, then guys would be allowed to come in there and pummel you, right? So they're trying to, it's a balance that you have to strike. If you're trying to protect the quarterback, then you got to give something up. And that is, you cannot gain any additional yardage once you go feet first. Once you decide, once your feet start going out first in a slide, play over right there.
Okay. Real quick, Cam Newton on the end of the Giant game. He had a run, too. He slid, and one of the opposing players did make an effort to touch him when he was after he slid down.
Well, I don't know, man. We're watching the Jags game, so, I mean, it's. I don't know about that particular play. Did he slide feet first? I mean, I'm not saying guys
did. They probably tagged him.
Right. You might tag a guy. You are allowed to touch the guy. You're just not allowed to hit him. And regardless of whether he touched him or not, the ball would be blown dead. The play would be blown dead as soon as the feet go forward and the ball is spotted where the ball is at that moment. It's not where the feet are, it's where the ball is. So that's why Blake was clearly short of that first down. There's no question he was short of that first down. And he could not have got back up and run. But thank you for the call. Anyway, finally one we could knock out of the park there. Joel in Arlington, you're up next here on Jaguars Today. Go ahead.
Yes. I would like us to see us get Derrick Henry in the draft because I believe that would solve a lot of the problems for the offense. He can pick up the blitzes. And not only that, I believe he could make 100-plus yards a game, and that would keep the defenses honest that are playing against us.
Okay, never going to happen. But, you're entitled to your opinion, but you're going to be frustrated if you think that has any prayer of happening. They're not drafting another running back. They just spent one, who, by the way, is very good at blitz pickup, T.J. Yeldon. That's why he's played so many snaps this year, because he's been surprisingly good in blitz pickup.
Yeah, doesn't mean he had to have bad plays, because he certainly has.
Right. Now, he missed the game yesterday. All right, fine. But you're not with a team with all these holes on defense and arguably offensive line as well, you're not going to spend what would be necessary to get Derrick Henry, a first or second round pick next year, likely, after you've spent a high second-round pick on a running back. Not going to happen.
No.
So
unless it became some kind of crazy, stupid value to them. Like, if they valued him at the end of the first round and they're still sitting there in the third round and he's there, maybe, in that kind of scenario.
I don't see Derrick Henry lasting that long.
I don't either. But if that's the only way I could see the Jaguars having Derrick Henry.
He's not going to be a priority to them.
It would have to be A.J. Cann.
It would have to be like, wow, we thought this guy was a top 40 pick, and now here he is a full round later. But
yeah.
I don't envision that happening. So if you want to hold out hope, that would be your scenario. But even then, I just don't think, you know, there's a less than 1% chance of Derrick Henry. You never say never, less than 1% chance that happens here. Jason in Bartram, next up here on 1010XL. Good morning, Jason.
Morning, guys. Merry Christmas. I'll be fast and take your comments off the air, gentlemen. One, I think the shoelace experiment, I think it's time to end that and just have a true running back there. I like seeing Jonas Gray. He's new, but just, you know, he's still a running back. Two,
well, let me ask you, hold on, but I'll let you finish your points, but did you feel that way after last week?
Yeah, I felt that way since about the middle of the year, since we got Yeldon in there and having a true running back, a big guy able to get in there and run through the tackles. I just, honestly, yes, I felt that way.
Okay, because, I thought he ran great last week. You know, he wasn't an issue.
I agree. And I've seen him break plays, a big run against the Dolphins, and, you know, I just don't think he's been consistent enough. He's not a true running back. And, hey, I was all about the experiment because I love seeing him draft a guy. He was a proven playmaker in college. You know, bring him in and see what he can do, see if we can develop something. But for now, I just felt about the middle of the year, it just hadn't worked out. So I think
all right, that's fine. I would challenge your characterization of a true running back, but regardless, let's move on. What's your next point?
You know, as far as keeping the coaches, I love the logic of it. I like having them. especially the leaps that we've had with Olsen in there and progress, you know, building the offense and making them rise up and just, you know, growing the offense, maturing. I'm loving that. And, you know, again, the interception, I'd have went to A-Rob. You got a guy that's got a 10-foot vertical. I think I'd have stuck with him and seen him by himself over there. I'd had to toss it to him. But I love the show, guys. Merry Christmas.
All right, thanks, man.
Thanks a lot.
Appreciate it. Now, look, you don't just have to throw a fade, but that's part of the, when you say, we got this guy who can jump through the roof. That's why you throw fades to those guys.
Yeah.
Right? Isn't that kind of what you do? And
fade,
every time
back,
they
shoulder,
throw a fade,
yeah.
Right, what happens? I can't believe they're throwing fades. And I'm not saying that this particular caller feels that way. It's just, you know, I get it, Tony, but it's just, because it's not all coming from the same person, but when one thing goes wrong, that segment pops up, and they're not necessarily incorrect, and they're saying, why do you do this? And then when you try something else and that doesn't work, you're wondering why you didn't do the other thing,
yeah.
Right? Whatever worked, they all had the potential to work, some more than others, but
sure.
Had the play to Mercedes worked, you would have said, oh, that's clever, right? You know, they got Mercedes involved. Everyone was looking for all these other guys. I don't know. I get it.
It's yes and no, because it's kind of one of those things, like when they forced the turnover after they scored the touchdown and go down 7, they forced the turnover, and they ran the ball twice on that next series. The first two plays were runs to Denard Robinson. He got 11 yards and a first down, turned out. And I turned to T-Wig and I said, I know it got him a first down, but that doesn't mean I have to like running the ball twice after that turnover, right? Where you feel like you had momentum coming out of the half, you drive down, you get a touchdown, you force the interception. I'm sitting there going, take a shot. Right? Like, this is the moment in this game where you take a shot downfield and try to get into the end zone. They got in the end zone on that drive, so what they called worked, but I could sit up there and say it worked. Doesn't mean I like
well, you don't
that
have
that's
to,
the direction
you don't have
they
to like it, but it can work anyway.
And the Mercedes
you know?
Play would have been the same thing. If it had scored a touchdown, it would have been like, that's a good result. I don't like that play.
And that's fine, but from their standpoint, they'd say, if we end up the drive with a touchdown, that's a successful drive. We didn't.
I wouldn't argue that.
And for them, you may not like every single play call preference. To me, I like whatever works. You know what I mean? Because, you know, we can sit here and say they should never do this. We say it over and over and over again. And then their situation calls for something. And sometimes that is going to work. Be it, you know, short yardage, run the ball. Four consecutive times. I'm saying give it to Toby Gerhart. You know what I mean, though? Sometimes you are trying to establish something and you try to pound it in there, and other people will say, well, no, after two or three times, you got to stop doing that. You know, sometimes
sure.
That's going to work. Sometimes the fourth one's going to go in. Sometimes it's not. Anyway, a little bit of semantics. I'm a bottom line guy. If it worked, it was good. Generally, that's not always the case. I get what you're saying. All
I'm
right.
I'm the Keenan guy. You know, Jimmy caught the 80-yard bomb. I'm the Keenan guy
right,
standing in the middle.
But I was
fields.
Open.
I was open.
My touchdown would have been
next
better.
Time. It needs to go to me.
They were fun yesterday, man. That was a lot of fun on the pregame. All right, we've got to take a time out here, and we will come back. This State in Football, the Honda Drive around the NFL, and John Oger from Jaguars.com coming up on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
And now, This State in Football History.
All right, This State in Football History is brought to you by Dr. McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry. We'll start with famous birthdays for this date. How
Blake
about
Bortles?
The former Jaguar? Stop it. No Blake Bortles today as far as I know. Although, did you see Johnny PTI pick that up last week?
They did.
In addition to me, apparently they got their information
Twitter
from the same source.
Settle a bet and all this. And
right.
No, it's not today.
Not so. His birthday. But today is Leon Searcy's birthday, from what I'm led to believe. Anyway, happy birthday, Big Leon. I don't know if it's your birthday or not, but from 96 to 99, he paired with Tony Boselli to make the best tackle tandem in the National Football League. He turns 46 years old today. Happy birthday to Mike Allstott. Six Pro Bowls for Mike Allstott, three-time first-team All-Pro, primarily because fullback was still a position you voted for at the time.
Right.
And he was the only guy that
going
put up any kind of
league.
Statistics, right? That did anything other than a pure blocking fullback. So Mike Allstott, a six-time Pro Bowler there. Born on this date in 1985. This will make you feel old. Jarrett Dillard is 30 years old. Holy cow. Parts of two seasons with the Jaguars. That was the inaugural draft class of Gene Smith, right? I believe it was.
Sounds right. I missed
I think
it,
he was.
So I'm a little vague on
yeah.
that.
I think it was the inaugural one. Mark Ingram, born on this date in 1989. Happy 26. Likewise, happy 26 to Jaguar safety Craig Lawston, who turned 26 on this date. Tony, what happened on this date? I don't know. It disappeared on me. Where'd it go? Hold on a second. It's around here somewhere. You know what? I'm pretty sure I deleted it off my page. But I know this. Sometime back in the 40s on this date, the Chicago Bears beat the New York Giants for the NFL championship. That's true. I just I erased it off my page, and I couldn't tell you the specific year. I'm going to guess it was 1944, but I could be wrong. It was sometime back in that decade. This date in football and other dates similarly recognized are presented by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry, located in town on Gate Parkway. If you need cosmetic work done or you're in the market for a family dentist, call Dr. McCall's office at 620-9225. In the meantime, visit jamesjmccall.com to get a complete list of comprehensive care services that is this date in football history.
Now, the Honda Drive Around the NFL, brought to you by your First Coast Honda dealers.
According to Adam Schefter, the NFL is considering suspending New York Giants wide receiver Odell Beckham Jr. for one game following his antics during the Giants' loss to the now 14-0 Carolina Panthers yesterday. Beckham drew three personal foul penalties during the game, threw a punch, and went diving in late during a play, making helmet-to-helmet contact that looked pretty darn intentional with Panthers cornerback Josh Norman. The Giants are one game behind Washington in the NFC East. They play at Minnesota this week on Sunday Night Football. The New England Patriots have already clinched the AFC East, one of the top two seeds in the AFC, but the injuries keep pouring in for the Pats. Wide receiver Danny Amendola, linebacker Dante Hightower, and safety Patrick Chung all left the Pats' win over Tennessee yesterday with injuries. Amendola injured his knee and was unable to return to the game. Julian Edelman has practiced the last 2 weeks, and it sounds like he may be close to returning for the Pats at wide receiver. Hightower had already missed the last two games with a sprained left MCL, and appears he may have re-injured that knee, and Chung left with a hip injury. No further details were offered after the game about any of those injuries. And Kellen Moore has been named the starting quarterback for the Dallas Cowboys by head coach Jason Garrett.
Man, that is a weak-armed quarterback right there. But he helped make it competitive, at least, on Saturday night. By the way, it was 1941. Bears beat the Giants for the NFL championship. And also, 1969, Vince Lombardi coached his final football game, and he was the head coach of the Redskins at the time, losing on the road at the Cowboys 20-10. Let's say hello to Johnny O, the senior writer from Jaguars.com. What's up, Johnny?
Oh, don't know.
Oh, don't know. Yeah, no, O has no idea.
Yeah. O knows he's a big Titans guy right now.
Right. We're Titans and Jags. Yeah, those two.
We need that Titans offseason momentum, baby.
It's boiled down to this.
We need those storylines in Tennessee to be, it was a miserable year, but they found a way to beat Houston and Indianapolis to close it out. Momentum.
Pretty much every story on Jaguars.com this week will be talking about what a fantastic head coach Mike Mularkey is.
Yes, and also how Zach Mettenberger is the clear choice in the quarterback battle in Tennessee after coming off the bench, at least put some points on the board yesterday.
Go Titans.
Whatever.
Tighten up.
I don't care.
Let's go.
I don't care who they have, who they roll out there. Honestly.
Tighten up.
Look, John, certainly we want them to go to the postseason. Even if it were likely that they go at this point, which it's not. You know, the missed opportunities, I totally get the fan frustration with.
Sure,
it's great if we're playing meaningful games, but the reason we're playing meaningful games is because this division has become among the two worst in football by a significant margin.
Well, and it's become that, obviously, because the quarterback situation at both the other teams. My son was asking me last night, can the Titans really win those two games? I said, well, probably not. But when you're dealing with backup third-team quarterbacks, anything can happen. So are the Texans or the Colts, once they get away from playing each other and they go play other teams, are they capable of losing those two games? Yeah.
The way I saw what I saw from them yesterday indicates yes.
Right.
Right.
But they probably won't, because you figure out a way to win those games. History tells you that a team fighting for the postseason in that situation against a team that's not is probably going to win it somehow. It just sort of feels that way. But again, when there's no reason these quarterbacks can't play well, but it wouldn't surprise you in those situations if there were enough mistakes where you're talking with 3 minutes to go, it's going to go either way. So who knows?
Sure, which negates the other side of the equation or overlooks it, is the Jags need to win their last two.
Well,
the confidence level from me is pretty low that they're going to do that at this point in time.
Yeah, I don't necessarily agree with you on the final game, but this week's game, you know, I never sit there and say they can't win it, because obviously they can. But if you don't get pressure on Drew Brees, you're going to get killed.
Yeah.
And they haven't shown this season that they're going to get enough pressure on him without blitzing. And, you know.
And even when they do blitz, and I don't blame Bob Babich or Gus Bradley, or whoever's ultimately responsible for putting together the game plan, saying, you know what, we got to blitz, because I've been calling for it. Because
right.
When four-man pressure doesn't work, eventually somebody's going to get open.
Sure.
The idea is, all right, we may not get to him, but we're going to force him to throw the ball quicker than he otherwise would.
Right.
And
but sometimes, I mean, and I've been saying all year, it's great to say blitz, blitz, blitz. If your guys aren't really good at it, which this is not a great blitzing team, then it can hurt you just as much. And there were times yesterday, where it did. So
it did. I guess it could hurt you just as much. I don't know. Like, you know, I go back to the New England game where mm-hmm. they're scoring on every single
right.
possession, right? I mean, does it hurt you more?
No.
you can't score on more possessions.
The bottom
than you
line
have.
Is, you know, I'm not sure there is an answer for it. And if there is, they haven't shown it yet.
Right. Well, there's not a solution coming in the next two games that they haven't tried over the
right.
first 14.
It's very much a, we're going to have to bring pressure. We're going to have to, and there are so many situations, and you saw it yesterday, where basically on third and long, they are trying to dial something up and hoping it works. And it just doesn't feel like they have any more confidence in it than we do.
Yeah.
Because I don't think they have the personnel to do it.
As Fred Taylor said in the post game yesterday, and I agree with him, it's those kill you more than your own 0-for-8 on third down. You want to
no
be
question.
More efficient on third down, but you can make up for that, make big plays on first and second down. Man, it's all right. We got 3rd and 9. We got 3rd and 11. We got 3rd and 5. We got 3rd and it didn't matter what the distance was. Matt Ryan was going to find somebody, and quite often in the second half, it was, you know, a guy like Roddy White or Justin mm-hmm. Hardy, guys who are not at this point in their careers. One at the, towards the end, one at the very beginning.
But if they have 6 or 7 seconds to get open,
exactly,
get open
and that's the point, right? That they had enough time to find these options, which have not been doing much of anything in the passing game for Atlanta.
It was strikingly similar to many games. You know, the one that just springs to mind whenever I think about it is the Houston game out here, where if you look at the stats, they, except for one drive yesterday, they won in the running game defensively. And you win on first down, you win on second down, and years of watching football, you guys watch this as much as I have, okay, one on first and second down, now it's 3rd and 7. It feels like you're gaining momentum, you're getting that leg up in the situation, and one out of 2 or 3 times you expect to get off the field, and you expect to have that payoff, and this team this year doesn't.
All right, let's take a quick timeout. We'll come back. John Osier is going to stick around. We'll open the phone lines back up to you at 641-1010. Also got to hear from Gus post-game yesterday as the Jags fall to 5-9 now. Mike Dempsey, John Osier, Fat Tony here with you. It is a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday. Jaguars Today continues in a moment on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
It's time for Oh No's with Jaguars.com's John Osher.
Oh No's.
Presented by Florida Pump Service on Jaguars Today.
No, wait, that said you do know. That said O does know. So we're expecting more answers.
I know, I'm hitting my vibe right now.
Right?
Is
we're
what
expecting.
I know.
Is that what you're doing?
Here we go.
You're vibing a little
right.
bit. We're expecting you to have solutions to all the issues for what went down.
I'm hitting
yesterday.
My groove right now, Mike. Look at that.
I know you are. Right. I know you are. You're not quite as animated as O'Halloran when Tyler plays a little Timberlake for him. I mean, when he plays Justin Timberlake, O'Halloran. Yeah!
Right, yeah.
He goes, he gets a little giddy.
He'll drop a groove every now
and then.
He
gets animated about that. He gets animated about Timberlake and WWE and candy for breakfast and Broadway shows. We actually made him list 10 things. Was it last week or the week before?
I think it was last week.
That he likes?
10 things that he likes. Yeah. And he was able to come up with 10 things that he
okay.
likes. I was surprised. Yeah.
Mike Mularkey on that list?
No. I did suggest candy for breakfast because I've seen him eat candy for breakfast quite a bit.
Well,
and he had to grudgingly agree that, yes, I do enjoy candy
for
breakfast.
If you're going to eat candy for breakfast, it better make you happy.
Right. Otherwise, what's the right. point? Right. All right. Let's hear from a little bit from Gus Bradley before we go further here with Johnny O and get more of your calls in at 641-1010, looking back on the Jags defeat yesterday, 23-17 at the hands of the Atlanta Falcons. And we'll start with his opening statement in his post-game press conference.
First of all, I want to thank the fans. I know this is not the way we wanted to end it here at home. Our fan base was great. Appreciate how loud they were and what they put into it. It's just this one of stings. Just because you know, we made some good plays. Saw a lot of guys making some plays. We just didn't make enough. And you know, I look back at trying to go through it, replay it in my head. I know right away they went down and scored, and I know we struggled offensively right away in the first half. And you know, that interception. And fortunately, we kept it from getting a touchdown. And I think going in the second half, we came back, and I really pleased with how we responded. Got a touchdown, interception, touchdown, get the game tied up. Momentum's on our way just that fourth quarter. I think they had the ball 9 minutes in the fourth quarter. They were 4-for-6 on third down. Defense, you can look at and say, hey, defensively gave up 6 points in the second half, but the time of possession. You know, we didn't get enough stops on third down to give our offense enough of opportunity. Now, our offense had 6 plays for, what, minus 1 yards, too. So it wasn't like we were moving the ball tremendously in the fourth quarter either. So with all that being said, we had a chance with our last drive. Great play by Marquise just off the fingertips of Hearns. And, you know, we lost the game.
A little bit more than off the fingertips, I thought, on that one. But
summed it up pretty well. I mean, you know, at first glance in the second half, when you just looked at the stats, your instinct was to say, the defense. And then you're like, nah, they couldn't get any pressure at all.
No.
And it just took the life out of them.
Third, I mean, they constantly got them in third and long. Constantly.
Gave up five 5 yards on 17 second half carries or something like that for Atlanta.
Right.
It was absurd. I mean, you don't ever do that against the run.
Even
the Jaguars, who ran poorly, got 2 yards a carry yesterday. Couldn't get anything going in the second half. The Falcons couldn't, not running. And yet, if there's been a broken record about this season, most games you've been sitting here saying they couldn't get a pass rush on third down.
Grant, I think one thing for me, listening to that, if I'm one of these Jag fans that has had it up to here, right, and we hear from them, and we didn't hear from them much last week because they had the big win. And that's not, you know, you get it. It's more difficult to point the finger of blame when you hang a franchise record in regular season points. But what Gus said, this one stings. I think to those fans, they all sting. Sure. Yeah. This game has played out how many times? Slightly different formula, but basically a team that you have every reason to believe you should be able to beat. Mm-hmm. You've got them at home. You've got all these different things. You've got some momentum from the week before. There are all these factors that go into it, and you find another frustrating set of ways to lose a game.
And I'm probably stating the obvious here, but I think the reason it stung so much is for Gus was you played poorly in the first half, and then you really got it going and played well throughout the third quarter, and you sort of thought you had the ship righted. And then all of a sudden played maybe as poorly in the fourth quarter as they have in any quarter all season. You know, when you combine the offense, which was fumble this, kicking the ball back toward the goal line, and then not being able to generate any key pass rush, meaning on the plays you needed it, it looked like Matt Ryan had on any play that he dropped back, he had exactly as much time as he needed. And I think that surprised them because the third quarter didn't feel that way. They felt like they had gotten through it, and then all of a sudden, boom.
Yeah, it felt like at times they were that half step off. I mean, I can remember the first third down conversion on that long drive there in the fourth quarter. It felt like they were all around Matt Ryan, and he just kind of flicked the ball out there towards Julio Jones, who appeared out of nowhere, which the big-time receivers are going to make those kind of plays from time to time. It was disappointing. Gus Bradley yesterday talked about that final drive for Atlanta there in the fourth quarter, taking off all that time on the clock.
Well, we brought some pressure on them. There's a third down. We had some third and long situations, too. Third and nine brought pressure. We didn't play the coverage exactly right on a pressure. And then they had another one where they got some yards on a third down. Then one on a cover one where we played man coverage. So we tried some different things. They just executed.
They executed, but at the same time, you didn't play the coverage right. Why didn't you put? You know what I mean? I mean, things like that, I think, and I get it. The Jags have had different players in there because of injuries and whatnot. But, again, you've been here, you know, the whole season. Let me ask you something. We haven't talked about this much at this point. I don't think we've mentioned it all on this show. I heard the guys talking about it this morning on the drill. Nick Marshall's decision to take the ball out from 8 yards deep in the end zone. Terrible decision. You put that on the, should a coach be in his ear at the last second? And I mean, don't, at some point, when do you assume that a guy should know what you've coached him to do? And at the same time, in the heat of the moment, maybe he does need a little bit of reinforcement, whether he should or not, maybe he does.
Yeah. I mean, I guess you could have told him, hey, if you feel the ball and your feet are almost hitting the chalk, don't bring it out. But,
and you think
there's also a case where a coach, should you have to tell a guy that? Should you have to tell? I mean,
but maybe you do.
There's been several cases like, yeah.
I mean, should you? Maybe not.
I'll say this about that particular play. Watching the entire game, every time they kicked the ball off to Nick Marshall, didn't matter where he caught it, it felt like he was ready to return it. And whoever that last guy in front of him was always told him to take a knee. No, we're not returning this one. Take a knee, take a knee. And if you watch that kick again, nobody told him that. And whoever it was that had been telling him the entire game, we're not returning this one, we're not returning this one. I don't know if it's that other guy's decision that the Jaguars are kind of leaving it in his hands as to whether or not Nick's going to return this ball, but he didn't direct him to take a knee on that one. He turned upfield to block on that last kick. So I don't know what the communication is
maybe
back there. I don't like
football.
I don't like that that's the communication, if that's what it is, that Nick should have some ability to make that call by himself.
Right, 8 yards deep at that point. Get the ball at the 20.
But it was the third or fourth time that he had caught one that deep.
Well,
and
then,
started coming out, and the guy told him
then
no.
Whoever it was that was signaling him to stay there, if that in fact is the case, then what are you thinking in that circumstance? Somebody, there's a breakdown in decision making on that play.
And I could see if it was a situation where Nick Marshall had returned kicks this year with the same feeling of success as
Rashad with punts.
Sure.
If you threatening to break a few,
right, which every time Rashad touches it right now, I'm looking up from my computer making sure I watch it because you get the feeling he can break it.
Sure.
You know, there's not a knock on Nick. He hasn't done that as a kickoff returner enough to make anybody feel like, you know what, our odds go up if he's got the ball in his hands coming out. So, you know, that wouldn't apply there.
I get it if there's 35 seconds left in the game. You feel like, you know what, you're only going to have a handful of plays here, and here's an opportunity to make a big play and pick up a chunk of yardage. I could see it more in that circumstance.
Right.
I just,
but the way this offense has been moving and the way that it has hit consistently, even yesterday when they moved the ball, it was chunks. You know, at that point, you think our best chance is to get the ball in situations where Blake can get the ball to our three or four guys and hit chunks, a better percentage chance than a long return, probably.
All right, let's get to Gus talking about the offense starting slowly once again.
Boy, I don't know. You know, we come out there and we talk about trying to maybe get the ball first. You know, I know we deferred this time to get the ball in the second half. You know, but last week we had the ball to start it off. So we went down there and scored last week. I don't know. We got to look at rhythm and how we, you know, it's just like on defense. Sometimes you bring pressure to stimulate the defense a little bit. And we just got to look at ways to come out faster.
You know, you're in a bit of a catch-22 in the sense and deciding whether to take the ball or not in that circumstance. Because if, like last week, you're starting slow, it's not just a matter of do I have the ball, right? It's right. You're trying to, that's not the reason why you're starting slow, whether you had the ball first or second. So if you are starting slow and you think, all right, I'll take it first and we go three and out, we're giving it to Atlanta. Now they're going to get the ball in the second half and essentially get the ball to start both halves. Right now, that may be negative thinking or it may be realistic thinking until you figure out.
With a young team, I kind of like deferring. And I don't know why.
I don't know if it was Jeff or Dan, though, made the point this morning that, you know, you're basically the strength of each team is their offense right now. There's a strength to either team, it's their offense. So instead, you're giving the ball to their strength and putting your weakness out there, you know, and a lot of good defensive teams love giving the ball up. And most teams, as a general rule, because they like that second half kickoff.
Yeah, and that's the thing. You like to have that chance to score late, hit it, and then get the ball back and have 14
points. Right. I think they were talking about that with Belichick last week.
Right.
You know.
The bottom line is, if you don't execute, then you're not going to take advantage of the situation anyway. So, and they weren't executing consistently enough yesterday to make you think they were going to automatically take advantage of a situation in their favor.
Wow. Tyler said at one point Atlanta was 14 rushing attempts, generated 80 yards. Then they finished 33 for 83.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That is staggering, man. Yeah. When you put it in those stark terms, that's 19 for 3.
And it was interesting. Paz said, and he didn't go into exact detail because he didn't want to talk about exactly what scheme they were doing to do it. But he said in the first half on the drive where they really ran well, the Falcons, he was having trouble getting off blocks because of his hand. And he said the defensive line, they adjusted, and the defensive line started really playing well enough where all he had to do was run to the ball. And he said that was the key in the second half.
What, did he run to the ball?
Well, but as he's wont to do, he said the defensive line, he couldn't get off blocks and shed the way he liked.
Right.
But he could tackle. So they shifted up a little bit, and the defensive line was able to hold and allow him to free up. And, impressive game in second half for the whole defense in terms of stopping the run.
Here's what Posluszny said about that very issue.
No, I think because of how practice went throughout the week, we felt like that we could do just about everything that we needed to do to have some success. Just telling the guys earlier, I didn't get on and off blockers as well as I could have. That's one thing I'm going to have to definitely work on throughout this week because we've got a couple more games left.
All right, so yeah, basically that. You know, can't get on and off blockers quick enough, but damn, man, that was an impressive game for a guy playing with one and a half hands.
Look, from an Atlanta perspective, like if you were a Falcons fan watching that game, especially that long drive, I would have been just beside myself watching that team do what it was doing because it was run for nothing on first, run for nothing on second, and let's hope Matt Ryan can make a play to Julio on third. I mean, that was their entire game plan in the fourth quarter, and the Jags are so deficient getting after the passer and defending the pass right now that it worked.
And I guess
that's the most disappointing thing.
I wasn't shocked, and I'm not just desponding over the loss, is that's sort of been what they've been most of the season on defense. That, you know, not every game, but for the most part, if you had to pick a theme and had to sum it up, stop the run, can't get off the field on third down. I mean, that's been how it is, and I don't know that you fix that with the current personnel.
All right, let's go one more call here before we break. Steve in Riverside, you're up next here on Jaguars Today. Go ahead, man.
Hey, how's it going, fellas?
It's going well. What's up?
First off, I had a little thing about the fans calling in about the run game and about the nod. And, he did fumble. He had a couple of fumbles or whatnot. But we are not a run team. We're a pass team. Although they said they want to be a run team and help Bortles take pressure off Bortles. We're a pass team. If you look at it, the Nod was averaging 4 yards per carry before this game, with less carries and less yardage. And to Yeldon's defense, not saying I like Yeldon, but he's doing all right. But to Yeldon's defense, to me, they don't run him enough. And like you said, Fat Tony, for all the crying we did about Gavin, check downs, we have two running backs, in my opinion, who can be quite dangerous in check downs or short passes. We don't use them enough. Bottom line, it's hurting us because you have an A's and B's in your drafts as far as grades. You could probably say the free agency might be like a C, C minus or so. So you have to put it together. And I understand everybody's getting better. We're getting receivers. And in fact, we have a Pro Bowl receiver, in my opinion, and Pro Bowl players. So it's going to come to a point where you have to get over the hump of winning games that need to be won, and that is very winnable. This has been a problem with us. We can't seem to get past this hump. And until we get past this hump, and this is just me as a fan, until we get past this hump where we are winning these games that need to be won and have to be won, to me, we're making just little progress.
All right, Steve, thank you for the call. To your particular point about Denard Robinson, we had one caller earlier said, oh, we got to get rid of this guy's not a running back. We got to get rid of him. Again, my point was, did you feel that way last week? Because right. I certainly didn't feel that way last week. It was a terrible game for Denard Robinson. I know he caught a bunch of dump-off passes, didn't do a ton with them. I mean, I expect him to catch the ball if it's thrown to him. You know, yeah, he ran 14 times for 28 yards. So.
I mean, he has a role as a specialized running back.
Sure.
But
I expected more
absolutely
out of him yesterday
right
than what he was able to generate. But that doesn't mean that I'm throwing the baby out with the bathwater.
No.
So much like, look, I'm going to sit here, and I'm so frustrated with Blake Bortles' throw at the end of the first half. It's,
yeah,
you know, I just can't even describe. But that doesn't mean I can't sit here at the same time and recognize, but damn, they got something in Blake Bortles, right? Rough edges need refining.
Absolutely.
There's no question about it. But
and that's, again, sort of yesterday was a microcosm in the season in a lot of ways, on offense and defense.
Right. It's not all or nothing. That's the
correct
thing. And for a lot of fans, on any aspect of it, you're allowed to feel that way, but I'm allowed to feel opposite.
Right.
All right? I don't think it's not all so-and-so's fault. It's not all the play calling. It's not all this. There are a lot of things that go wrong. And for a player like Blake, yeah, he's cost you in some key situations.
Right.
He's also lifted you in many key situations as well. And I think the total body of work is well in the positive side of the ledger.
If you believe he's not going to get any better, then he's not good enough. But
right,
I don't believe that. And I don't believe watching him based on where he was last year and now, and even based on where he is now compared to the beginning of the season, I would be stunned if he doesn't get better.
I'd be more concerned if he was incapable of doing certain things on the field.
Absolutely.
I think he's capable of doing everything out there on the field. He needs to be a better decision maker.
I think that's dead on.
Right. So anyway, we'll take a time out, come back. Fan feedback spotlight today asking you, other than the loss itself, what is the most frustrating aspect of yesterday's game? Share your thoughts with us. It's Wild West Guns and Gold Monday. Mike Dempsey, John Osier, Fat Tony here with you on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Bunch formation, right, shotgun for Matt Ryan. Dropping, looking to his left, fires it out, ball's tipped into the air, and it's going to be picked off. It was tipped by Odrick, and Paul Posluszny, club on his hand and all, has picked it off, and the Jaguars will start inside the 40-yard line on offense.
Paul Posluszny gets the batted ball in the air from Jared Odrick, and he's able to make the interception, and it's his third on the season. This time, though, none bigger with the club.
I was talking to one of the coaches before the game, and I was asking, how is Paul Posluszny with the club this week? And the quote was, he had more interceptions this week in practice than he ever has. And he said, hopefully he can get one in the game, and he did.
My first thought upon hearing that was, Dan, what kind of week did Blake have in practice, right? I mean, honestly, if the club guy is getting you more than anything he's done all season long, I didn't necessarily take that as a major positive, John.
Yeah, it may not have been playing against Blake at that point.
That's the, maybe
I
mean, not, but
Scout team. I'd be surprised if it was Blake throwing too many of those.
Maybe. That might be the case. But regardless, that's kind of how I kind of chose to think, huh, that's not a good sign, put it this way, for whoever was throwing the football.
True.
As far as that went. All right, let's get to some of the fan feedback spotlight and a few more thoughts before we get out of here on the Jags falling to the Atlanta Falcons. Despite that, technically still alive, and isn't technically the best way to still be alive, right? I mean, if they're
tighten up.
Yeah, the alternative. Titans, Jags, it's really down to that. Those two teams, your team and the Titans, each win a pair of games, you're in the playoffs. It's that simple. It's really not that convoluted, honestly.
No, it's not convoluted at all, but like we said, you know, for this team, this matchup this week, pressure and Bree, this is a tough win for this team.
Oh, I don't disagree with you in the least here. Fan feedback spotlight brought to you by the Tom Bush family of dealerships asked you, other than the final score, the outcome of the game itself, what aspect of the game was the most frustrating to you? Tony, what did we get on Twitter today?
Here's what we got today from Brandon. Lack of a pass rush, abysmal. If you're going to introduce the D-line as Saxonville, they need to produce. From Battle for Duval, the slow starts continue to plague this team. From Mike, that it was another awful team on a losing streak that came in and won. The Jaguars make me sad. From Irish Jaguar, that the patterns continued, broke another team's losing streak. Blake's loss streak at the bank. From Movie Guy Paul, Blake's interception at the one. Why the heck did we abandon the run at the one? Tore out the rest of my hair. From John, it's crazy for fans to think that BB5 needs to be benched. He's the reason we're close. From Daniel, the missed opportunities in the ever-crucial pick by Bortles. They're just so critical. From Jimbo, Matt Ryan being able to finish his Christmas shopping while waiting for a receiver to get open. From John, letting the Falcons convert on almost every third down. The D needs to get off the field. Hashtag no pass rush. From Al, my one major upset, the return of Bizarro Blake. Hashtag critical interceptions. From Bout Them Jags, D-line as always. And from Cam, having no legitimate pass rush, and Portals making another costly mistake in crunch time, hashtag fire Babbage.
All right, here's a few on Facebook. Steve Muncy said, mental mistakes. Josh Richburg, Jack fans, it's third and long. Make some noise. Lock down the bank. And that's a first down. Hashtag Jaguars today. Rob Conklin Jr. said, just another game we could have won. 6-10 point swing with Blake's interception. Still, go Jags. Bob Oaks, same thing has been frustrating me all year. Lack of pass rush until the Jags find a pass rush. A good quarterbacks will continue to pick their defense apart. Kevin Carter said that a guy with one hand tackled and played better than guys did with two. Derek Stewart, third and long after third and long, couldn't get off the damn field. Kenneth Killian, another home loss to a team on a six-game losing streak. Alan Munger, that once again, one or maybe two plays sealed our fate. Interception at the goal line when we could have at least had a field goal, led to a field goal the other way, and the third and 14 that we gave up in the fourth quarter that led to that last field goal. Any number of third downs were frustrating me. Seth Linegang said run blocking seemed a little bit off at times. Don't like it when D-Rob has to go outside the tackles. Runs better inside, in my opinion. Also, how about that? Also, Tyler, you need to email Seth back about his shirt, he says. Let's see. I'm not going to go on that.
It's great radio.
Yeah, it is great radio. Just it would take you inside the business there. Joshua Lee Wright couldn't get off the field on third downs. INT before a half hurt us. Larry Venable, the most frustrating thing to see was the fact that our defense couldn't stop a team. They couldn't fight their way out of wet paper bag the previous week. Watching Matt Ryan pick apart our defense was sickening. It's something we talked about, you know. And again, I understand what San Diego did yesterday, but we highlighted that all last week. San Diego in a month's worth of games, three contests, scored exactly 3 points. The other one, Phillip Rivers, picked the Jags apart. And, you know, Matt Ryan and company, 38-3 the final the week before?
38-0.
Was it 38 to nothing? I gave
yes, it was.
Way too much credit on that. Yeah. It was 38 to nothing. And then they come in here, and they didn't do it, just anything they wanted to, but they did
enough.
Did enough, right?
It's matchups, and you know, I sounded very repetitive last week because every time I talked about the game, pass rush. If this team didn't rush the passer, Matt Ryan and Julio Jones are good enough to make enough plays where this was not going to be an easy walk-away win. And sure enough, they didn't rush the passer enough, and Matt Ryan is good enough to take advantage of that. So I wish I had something more clever to say about that.
Is what ails this team fixable in one off season?
One off season?
I mean, it's upcoming off season for where they stand right
now.
Yeah,
because I don't think even on defense, as much as you look at it and say, oh my goodness, it's horrible on defense, they stop the run. They do half of it. They stop the run very, very well. And then when they get into third and long, they can't get to the quarterback. So if you get a guy or two and get to the quarterback, you're not gonna turn this.
Not gonna be a top five defense.
Well, you're not gonna get it off field on every third down because this is the NFL. Teams convert third downs, but can you stop it from being epic where you just say where you're watching Brian Hoyer stand out there and throw complete passes in Houston and it cost you a game? You need a few pressures in a few key situations, and all of a sudden that game looks a lot different yesterday. They gave 23 points. That's a good offense. It's a top 10 offense. And except for not being able to get to the quarterback, overall they played pretty well against that offense.
Yeah, I didn't think it – well, I don't know. You think they're a top 10 offense? I don't know. I guess Devontae Freeman's had a pretty good year.
Statistics say they are.
Yeah, I know. I just – they're a two-man offense is what they are, you know.
Two-man are pretty good.
Well, they are pretty good.
And I'm trying to be snide about it. But they are not a dysfunctional offense in any way. This is not one of the bottom feeder offenses.
All right.
Right.
I mean, Matt Ryan's having the worst year of his career by far. You know, and that.
And when you can't pressure the quarterback in the NFL, any quarterback can do what they did yesterday.
I understand that. But it's still frustrating.
Sure, it's frustrating.
You know, it's not like he's on top of his game. It's not like he was Tom Brady coming in here or Cam Newton. And honestly, you look back and you wonder how they keep it so close with Cam Newton and company. By the way, Carolina Panthers are now the highest scoring team in the National Football League.
It's a remarkable.
At least they were going into Sunday Night Football.
They are still.
Did Arizona not pass them?
It's truly remarkable. I keep the NFL.com up during the game and switch back and forth to keep track of the Jags stats. And I'm watching the Carolina score. And it was really the first time all year I had thought, I wonder if they can go undefeated. which clearly they can. And it's just amazing how they have taken so long to get into the consciousness that we might be watching something historic and great. But, you know, I think they can do it. I mean, they may run the table.
They should do it.
No, I mean 19-0.
They certainly could. Yeah. I mean, I think you got to, obviously, right now, I think their big issue is where Seattle ends up. And
you might have to play Seattle, Arizona to get there.
Right. You might have to play Seattle in the first week of the playoffs.
Seattle, Arizona, New England.
Dangerous team.
Potentially to go undefeated.
Right. Arizona may have lost Tyrann Mathieu last night. They're not sure about that. And then you have, you never know. One injury changes the whole thing. Cam got hit cheap. Out of bounds in the just about the side of the knee yesterday, which, I mean, could you imagine had that been a season-ending injury?
But it sort of goes without saying, I'm not trying to interrupt your Cam Newton thought, Odell Beckham was abysmal.
Are you kidding? Of
That's
course.
Just, I mean,
abysmal as a player or abysmal as a person?
As a person. I mean, I've been watching the league for about 20 years, following it as a reporter fan. I'm not sure I've ever seen anything quite like that.
He was a punk. Blank.
I mean,
he really was.
It's
so off the charts. You don't see, in this league, you usually don't see that repeated times. Heat of the moment stuff you see, but there's such a respect among players for the other player's career that you usually don't see behavior like that.
Yeah, Brad Wing was asked about it. The
punter for the
Giants. He's like, this is how he is. Do I expect to see more of this? Yes, because he is. You know, the way he described it, very competitive, and that's what he said after the game. I'm a competitor. Well, you're a dirty cheap shot artist.
Yeah,
what you are.
You just usually don't see it. You know, and fans get annoyed with the jersey exchange after the game that happened. But there's a respect level among these guys for what they've done to get there that you usually don't see behavior like that.
Yeah, it felt like everything the NFL has been trying to get out of the game for 40 or 50 years. Right?
It was weird. I didn't see it until the highlights last night, and I kept watching it. This is just bizarre.
How Courtland Finnegan got a penalty when he tried to punch him in the head, when Odell Beckham tried to punch him in the head. Now, it was an open hand, but the referees and Rivera said he pointed out to the referees. Referees said none of them saw it. Right in the middle of the freaking field. You saw something enough to give
weird.
To throw a flag on Courtland Finnegan right as Odell Beckham's trying to smack him in the head. It was unbelievable, and they left him in after that. Nothing happened to him, and then it ultimately culminated with him spearing Josh Norman in the side of the head.
I mean, it was
if he's playing this week, I will be. That is just weak
at this point,
on the NFL.
I don't see how just with the backlash, I don't see how they could.
Yeah, well,
let him play.
Don't forget about the Jaguars targeting Odell in the preseason.
Well.
Yeah, that's because he's a big baby who apparently wants to run wide open and free just like he did last week. It'd be great if everybody wouldn't cover him, apparently, if you're Odell Beckham. He's a great player, great talent, but he is a little sore loser, poor sport. You see the Josh Norman tweeted out the picture of Beckham with the one-hand grab, and he was catching the letter L. It's pretty funny, actually.
That's funny.
That's some high-level trolling right there.